The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Man, we've talked about a lot. The spending bill.
Yeah.
The movement of Americans around the country, the article that Steve Moore, former Trump campaign economic advisor and Arthur Laffer of the Laffer Curve, wrote, and it was about Hillary Clinton last week, and actually 2 weeks ago, wasn't it? When she was in India and talked about how the people that vote for her were all the great economic states, and they said not quite. And so we've had some discussion on that. This story: a Brooklyn lawmaker wants to make it illegal for bosses to require their employees to respond to emails or texts after normal work hours.
Ooh. Hmm. Well, so that we could never then, we could never respond to email. we don't have normal work hours.
Under Councilman Rafael Espano Jr. Proposed the right to disconnect legislation.
Okay.
That's a quote.
Yeah.
Right to disconnect. Private employers with at least 10 workers would also be prohibited from retaliating against employees for not responding to those electronic communications once they clock out for the day. After leaving the office, many of us are glued to our phones, refreshing our Instagram feeds, but oftentimes we're also keeping up with our work and our bosses. Yeah. While technology has increased access to people and ideas, it's also made it possible for employees to be on call 24/7, we need to establish clear boundaries for our employees so they can mandate a healthy work-life balance and live without fear of retaliation for not answering work communications after work hours. So far, he has no co-sponsors of the deal. Another councilman introduced a similar bill last year, which only covered municipal employees, where the council has greater authority to legislate, yet the bill never made it out of committee. He hopes that similar laws allowing employees to power down smartphones after work. He is optimistic because they've passed in France, Germany, Italy, and the Philippines.
Hmm. Yeah. All right, then.
Now, does this apply to salary workers or does it apply to all workers? Because I read one article that said no exceptions for anybody.
So if you're required to answer email outside of, let's say, 8 to 5, you know, whatever your normal business hours are,
you'd be salary.
Well, if it's overtime, right, for someone who is not salaried, if someone is exempt from overtime, that means, you know, management or whatever. But I have to consult a payroll expert in my family and ask them.
Oh, do that. If
in certain states, are they required, if you're required to answer email, do you log that time? Because technically that's, what do they call that, telecommuting? That's working right from home or wherever you happen to be.
Well, if my boss called me
right
and wished to discuss work and I was an hourly worker,
right,
that happened to me in my youth,
mm-hmm,
could I have refused the phone call without being punished because I wasn't on the clock?
Right. And if they, like, call you into work, right, if they say, hey, if they call you and say, can you come to work? No, I can't, or yes, I can. Boom, it's over. Do they have to pay you for that time, even if they're just calling to see if you can come in? I don't know what the different state or city regulations require in that regard. I would have to consult. I do have a payroll expert in the family. I'll ask.
Now, see, our problem is we work those other hours.
Well, and
so normal work hours.
and here's the thing is that I do a lot of business for, you know, the office here and correspondence. And when we have correspondence, if we wait until we come in, so they, let's say they send me an email at 8 a.m. We get off the air at 5. They send me an email at 8 a.m. If I wait until, you know, I come in that night, well, that means they're not going to see it until the next morning. You just lost 24 hours. If I respond at 8:05, they can go on about their day and solve whatever issue, you know, there is, right? And
or,
so...
Or I'm asleep at 8:05.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so you can lose a lot of valuable time, which is why I've been so diligent about, you know, and I don't do it. I don't sit and monitor my email, but I look at it, you know, several times a day. I don't have it open all the time. So, but I do monitor, you know, several times a day. I look at it.
Yeah, you don't have it on the. We don't have it, for example, on the computer at home, on our email.
Right. Waiting, open. Work, open. Waiting, yeah. Work, exactly. Right. Waiting for something to arrive. No. Usually it's by phone. But no, it's.
Mm-hmm. Thing is, we can't make that excuse because we are always really working no matter what. I've been on the golf course and been working, and people have said, why don't you put the phone away? And I said, if I didn't have the phone with me, I wouldn't be golfing.
Well, that's the thing. We have to get a lot done. So there's, you know, like traveling this past week, you can get so much done with your phone. You know, you don't miss out on anything. You can, you know, you can catch up with work or you can just stay up to work, stay up to date on things.
You know, that's my decision now because my lease has run out.
Mm. Yeah.
And so I've got the Galaxy Note 5 that I've had for 2 years. I do everything on this thing.
Mm-hmm.
I was telling you, and I had to do it again today, that I've got, 2 computers. I have a desktop and a laptop. The laptop hadn't opened up since November.
Mm.
That's really like in my little studio that I have, but I haven't opened up since November. The thing sat there for 2 days updating.
Yeah,
and I knew it. I said, "Well, I want to use it this week."
Right.
And so, and then I opened it up again yesterday, and it was updating for another 2 hours again.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but that shows you how infrequently I use those computers. I do everything on my phone, and so now this phone works great, and it's like, well, I really don't want to upgrade to a Note 8 yet because you know that's already almost a year old. The Note 9 is coming out, you know, maybe I'll wait for that, but the battery's good on this one and it does everything that I want. But it really is amazing how life has completely changed. And I know for some people they would hate, well, they might hate doing our job. But part of our job is, you know, is, and it's exciting, is whenever a news item breaks, finding it, reading it, you know, sending it to, you know, to the email to make sure we can print it up to have it at night, analyzing what's going on. And I do it. I do 95% of my work on my phone to the point where people who know me will say, you're always on your phone. Quit. What are you texting? Can't you get off social media? And I went, well, no. Well, look, you're on Facebook or you're on Twitter. Yeah, but I'm looking at stories.
Yeah. I've set up my Twitter feed to be mainly news sources.
Right.
Yeah.
But and even I would say the majority of my Facebook feed is, you know, is news items, and a lot of those are, you know, the when some breaking news comes and they're, you know, they're streaming live and you can watch it, you know, right there. But Twitter's the same thing. I'm going through trying to figure out what's, and so people think you're just on social media, you're consumed by it. Well, no, I'm consumed by the news because it's what I do.
Mm-hmm.
But I can put it down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have no problem putting it down. I can walk to dinner and not touch it and talk to people because they don't, you know, they don't want you on your phone, you know, all the time.
Yeah,
and,
right.
You know, you want to at least pretend that you're having some human. I at least want to pretend that I'm having some human interaction, mm-hmm. even if my mind is elsewhere.
Right. Well, and I think getting back to this whole idea of creating some kind of law that prohibits an employer from, you know, requiring it. You know, we are, you know, the most productive worker on the planet. The American worker is the most productive on the planet. The reason is because there are people out there that just whatever it is they do, They're just driven by it. Now, you know, you can say they're workaholics or they're, you know, go-getters, A-type personalities, whatever. But often it requires that you're not working 8 hours, but you're working 12, 15, 18 hours a day. You know? Mm-hmm. And frankly, stuff doesn't get done unless we have people like that. I mean, seriously, that's where you make those strides. And so employers requiring it, I think people are smart enough to look at a situation, a job, as they apply for it, and know what's going to be required of them. And, yeah, that's going to, you know,
yeah,
in
true.
Some levels.
You know going in what the job requirements are. And
you really do. I mean, you know, even if it's just unsaid, you know that this is not going to be an 8-to-5 thing.
And I will say, not all people, but I will. I'm thinking of all my friends that are in business. That the majority of them, you know, they can get away from it. But they, these are people that I know, so mm-hmm. they have the same mentality as I do, and so I don't want to make that inclusive of all people. But most of them are like me. They would rather get it now and deal with it instead of having a huge thing waiting for them in the morning.
Yeah.
They would rather just go through the day doing stuff. Okay, let me check it. Okay, let me take care of that email now. Okay, let me take care of that. Oh, this client did this. Okay, let me get back to them right now. And so they're always doing it, and they find a way to do it as they're, you know, watching TV at home at night. They don't view it as pressure. I guess it's right. How you view it. If you view it, oh, doggone it, I got to do it tonight, they're going to do it. You realize, no, because of email, people are working all the time, therefore they're going to respond all the time. And therefore, you know, you learn to deal with it. Or, like, probably you're like me, where you'd sit there and say, I know all these people, I know 5 or 6 people will be contacting me tonight. If I don't do it now, I got to do it tomorrow morning.
Right.
And so if I got to do it tomorrow morning, I'll be thinking about it overnight. I'll just take care of it now.
I just had a conversation with a friend of mine, and she works, and she's in a considerable position at a very high-profile organization. And she said there's the time, because she gets up at 4 a.m. every day, and she said there's this time between 4 and 6:30, and I call it the quiet time. And that's when I take the quiet time, and I'll send stuff out. And she said, but there was someone else who came on board, you know, and I didn't know this, but they were essentially doing the same thing. So she sends something out at like 4:15, 4:20. Well, he answers his email, sees that she just sent it. So then he calls her, and she's like, ugh. So my day pretty much started at 4:25. Because she was doing what you were talking about, getting ahead of it, right. You know, trying to take care of some things. But look, it's not right for all people. You know, some people are, and I have family members that are very clear. I'm on the clock, I'm on the clock. If I'm not on the clock, it's over. I'm what? Don't call me. Schedule me. I'll be here when I'm scheduled. I'll be on time. And I'll work overtime if necessary, but it's going to be on the clock. Then I know people that have gone out and made huge fortunes because they're driven by something. And that passion just is it's just who they are. You know, what they do for a living is just part of that, and happens to be where everything manifests.
Well, you know,
into that.
It's sort of the same.
Greatness.
It's sort of the same thing as we get older, of people that say, "Nope, I'm retiring at 62,"
mm-hmm.
and other people that say, "I'm never retiring."
Mm-hmm. Right.
That retirement is important to them, and some people, it's very important
exactly.
just to put in the 9 hours a day. Well, then find yourself a job where you can just put in the 9 hours a day
or eight hours a day, that's great.
Go home. But it's really choices. But really, when you go and you go for a job, you basically know what it's going to be.
You know what's going to be required
right,
of
right.
you, and it's either right for you or it's not. Sometimes it's going to be that headache to get you to a point where you don't have to work that hard. Where, you know, it's that stepping stone to that next part of your career,
which
again, is also good.
But here it's the fact of the government trying to get into every little stinking aspect of the employer-employee relationship.
Right. Look, I we've had this conversation over the years with truck drivers, you know, where They field dispatches, you know, kind of always on them to keep the truck rolling, and they've got to deal with things because they live on the road, or, you know, doctors. I have nurses and doctors in my family. That's the smart side of the family. And they, you know, talk about their hours, and, I mean, they're working unbelievable hours. And it's just part of what you're sometimes driven to do. It's not, it doesn't mean it's perfect. It doesn't mean it's always great. But I think people understand what's required of them when they go for that job, what it's going to take.
866-90-RED-EYE.
In the world of maintenance, something that may seem small can cause the most trouble. That's why it's important to check your cabin air filters. You might not think about them often, but they're responsible for removing the smelly, harmful particles from the air inside your truck. When these filters don't get the attention they need, it hinders the airflow. While this issue seems small, a lack of airflow can damage HVAC components, including blower motor resistors and AC compressors. Knowing when to get these filters serviced is vital. Some manufacturers suggest every 50,000 miles for short haul or 100,000 miles for long haul. If you operate in dusty environments, however, consider having your cabin filters serviced more often. Many trucks are equipped with up to three cabin air filters. A fresh air filter, a front recirculate filter, and a bunk filter. Have all filters serviced at the same time to keep your AC running at peak efficiency.
This maintenance tip is a service of Valvoline HD. When the going gets tough, you need a motor oil you can count on.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
Eric Hurley and I'm Gary McNamara talking about the population shift as part of the economy and all part of Hillary Clinton talking about the states that are doing good and the states that weren't doing good, and the states that are doing good are the ones that are voting for her, and the column that we read that said, you see, by the way, people are moving. We go to Shaka in Atlanta. Shaka, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
How you doing?
Very good.
Hey. I was wondering that with this big shift, you know, a lot of the Democrats moving to the red states, will they bring their voting tendencies with them so they begin to flip the state district by district?
Actually,
I'm assuming that most of these people are Democrats moving here.
Well, actually, people would be surprised to know that the metro areas, that's where you're going to see those people moving to, and those metro areas are already blue. In those red states.
Definitely in Atlanta.
If you look, for example, at the state of Texas, and it'll be interesting. I can't speculate what's going to go on or predict what's going to go on. But George Bush beat Ann Richards in 95 here, which really was sort of the end of Democrat rule, if you think about it, in the state of Texas, which for the longest time was Democrat. Well, in 95, I think roughly the population was 18 million in the state of Texas when it turned Republican. It's now close to 30 million.
Yeah.
So probably by 2020, it'll be 30 million, an increase of 12 million people. The state's still a red state.
Yeah.
So
because
so basically they're going to be moving into more of the metro areas like they, you know, more progressive
areas. Well, they move all over the place, but still a lot of the people that move,
the largest majority of them in Texas have moved to the metro areas, yes.
Or they are in the metro areas,
same in Georgia.
But as to people moving in, you have all sorts of people moving in.
Yeah. Right,
we're assuming they're all Democrats. That isn't the case.
But when you look at where the jobs are, Shaka, that they're going to be, of course, in those metro areas. That's where those corporations are moving to. That's what's really attracting people to the states where people, you know, migrate. They're going, and thank you for the call, they're going to those areas where those corporations are moving to. But many of those areas are already blue. Dallas County, Travis County, Harris County, and Texas included.
Here.
is Apptastic on the App Store and Google Play. Download and listen over and over and over. Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Thanks so much for being here this morning. So, I want to get to... Oh, here it is. Texas and more than a dozen other states, led by Republican governors, are supporting the Trump administration in its lawsuit over California's so-called sanctuary city laws. In a court filing Monday, the states said the laws are designed to interfere with or block federal immigration enforcement, and California does not have that authority to do so. The U.S. Justice Department is challenging three California laws, including one that bars law enforcement from providing release dates for people in jail. Federal officials said they need the kind of information California has blocked to take custody of people in the country illegally who are dangerous and need to be removed. One thing that we talked about was the innovative way that the Justice Department is looking to win over California, and that is that the Obama administration led the way with their lawsuit against Arizona, who came up with laws to cooperate with the federal government.
Right.
To help them in the removal of illegal immigrants from the United States. The Obama administration fought and won that only the federal government can design laws, even if those laws by the states are to help the federal government enforce the law.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, the states are working against creating laws to work against the federal government to hinder them in enforcing the law. So it's really interesting, the fact that you see the precedent that was set by the Obama administration could come back to now haunt the liberal states.
Well, it will be interesting to watch. You know, there are some interesting cases that are out there right now. And I think as they all come together, I can't wait until, I guess, we see what SCOTUS is going to do on sanctuary policy altogether.
And the other one is the Trump administration announced last night that the 2020 census will ask respondents if they are citizens of the United States. In a statement, the Commerce Department said the citizenship question would be added in response to a request by the Justice Department made in December. The statement said that the Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross has determined that reinstatement of the citizenship question on the 2020 census questionnaire is necessary to provide a complete and accurate census block level data. That if the census is about getting the information, if we're going to have a census, the census is about what?
Counting people.
Counting people and knowing who those people are. Finding out how many citizens of the United States there are.
Well, and
the state of California has already said they will file suit.
So if you are not here legally, the state of California thinks that you should literally not count. Just for those out there that, you know, have defended that sanctuary state, they don't believe you should count.
In the California Attorney General and California Secretary of State, in a San Francisco Chronicle opinion piece published Monday, said that the inclusion of the citizenship question would be illegal.
Why?
How?
Based on? What?
Yeah, based on what?
Based on what? It's not illegal.
By the way,
the entire purpose of the census is to count people who are here.
The Democrats object to the census because it's a census.
You shouldn't count. If you're illegal, you shouldn't count. You don't even count as a person. Wow. Democrats, what's happened to you?
According to the Commerce Department, almost every census between 1820 in 1950, asked a question on citizenship in some form.
Mm-hmm.
The department also said the citizenship question would be the same as the one that is asked on the yearly American Community Survey.
Hmm.
The American Community Survey is sent to a much smaller percentage of American homes than the actual census. The census count is required by the Constitution, and its results are used to determine federal spending.
All right.
As well as the number of congressional seats allocated to each state for the next decade and the number of electoral votes available from each state. So what they're stating is we need to know how many citizens of the United States live in your area.
Mm-hmm.
So we can determine the number of congressional seats, which should be determined by the number of citizens of the United States.
Right.
Because what if you had a state that had all Russian illegal immigrants?
Ah, we've asked that question.
By the way, nobody's really brought that up. I know we have. I don't know if anybody else has brought
it up. If they're Russian illegal immigrants,
can they vote illegally? Because then Russians would be influencing the election.
Right. Let's say Putin decided to, I don't know, come to the U.S. illegally. No longer the leader of Russia. He's retired. He comes here illegally. Would he get that sanctuary status? I'm just asking questions. That's all I want to know. Does it apply equally? Remember the Russian lawyer who, with the whole secret meeting, and then that story came out, she might have been here illegally. You mean in New York? Illegally? You mean, so you're going to complain about her illegal status? Well, that's pretty rich.
To you we go. Let us talk to Anthony in Connecticut about that Brooklyn councilman who wishes to make it so your boss, you're not required to answer your boss's emails and or text after hours. Anthony, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
How you doing today?
Very good.
You know, I've worked on both ends of that, collecting a salary and collecting by the hour. And I've noticed quite a bit that when you work on a salary, the boss thinks he owns you and he can call you anytime he wants to. But when you work on a salary, they don't call you after hours because they know they're going to have to pay you for the time.
Yeah. Yeah, unless you're
getting paid $1 million a year to answer your phone, because I have relatives that get paid a lot of money to do that. It's if you go by hourly on your wage, you're making nothing. You're making less if you make by the hour.
Oh, if you're on salary, right? But you get to make that decision once you decide to accept or not accept the job,
right?
Right, but when you accept that job as a salary, most people go in there in the mindset, oh, it's a 40-hour week, maybe 50-hour week. Not your whole life dedicated to answering the phone because your boss is calling you. It's happened to me quite a bit.
Well, then you go in knowing that that's going to happen. You claimed ignorance, you claim it's happened to you many times, which means...
It's not ignorance. When you really want the job and you don't realize until you're into it that it occurs like that.
Well, that's happened to all of us where the expectations of the interview were not what we got in the job. But the fact is, once you go into a job as salary, and depending on, what area you are in,
you know whether you qualify for overtime.
Right. You know why, whether you qualify for overtime, and you know what the parameters of your boss are.
Right.
What you're saying is sometimes what they sell me in the interview is not the reality of the job. No kidding.
Mm-hmm. That often is the case.
I mean,
the question is, do you qualify for overtime?
Right.
And if you know going in you don't qualify for overtime and that it's going to be, a salary, you can expect that they're going to expect certain things of you.
Hey, you think you got it bad? Not anymore. I mean, this was a long time ago. We all dealt with this in the radio business. You go in and somebody says, I love what you do.
Mm-hmm.
You're just great. I love what you do. You go on the air the first day and they come to you and say, we don't like what you do. You've got to change up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So we understand. If any profession understands, this doesn't happen anymore. Why? Because we are viewed as experts in our field now.
Yeah, that's the reason.
That's because I traveled more than 100 miles to get this job. So you're always an expert when you come from 100 miles. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was most, I mean, I actually had a job one time where the guy who hired me said, I love what you do. Love what you do. And so I went on the air. This goes back to 1985.
Okay. Yeah.
So first day on the air, he said, okay, you did a good job, but there's some things that we need to be corrected. And I listened to your show and jotted down minute by minute what I liked and what I didn't like. And Eric, he sits there and unfolds. Remember the computer sheets, you know, that they basically, they folded up like an accordion?
Right. Yeah.
Well, he's got this like, it looked like it was about a half an inch thick. And he just lets it drop. Okay, you're on the air at 6:01 a.m. And at 6:01 a.m., you did this all the way through to like 10 o'clock in the morning. First day of my job. First day. Believe me, to the last caller, we understand that. But what you're saying is just some things, sometimes things aren't as they have been promoted to me. Well,
look,
welcome to life.
I mean, you know, this is the thing, is that if you know you don't qualify for overtime, I think it's to be assumed that they're going to require. Now, you also, if you're in that situation, remember, the interview is a two-way street, and if it's not a good fit, it's not a good fit. I mean, we all kind of measure what we're willing to do, I guess, for a job or not willing to do. You know, if you don't have the means, then of course you don't have the luxury of saying, I'm only going to work 8 to 5, or I won't do this, or I need off on Friday, or whatever it might be. I mean, you gain that leverage in a number of ways with experience at that company, but also with the ability to walk away from that negotiation.
Right.
You know, ultimately, and that is, you know what, it's not a right fit for me. I got a family, or I've got this, and it might be a number of things, but, you know, you set that tone. Otherwise, you basically have to bite the bullet and stay
until
with the experience.
Until you find another job.
And you can find another job and move on. The question is, do we need lawmakers or councilmen dictating what the employer is going to be able to do in something like this? Is that required?
Right. We know, I mean, this isn't a I worked for terrible bosses episode of the show.
No. Because that'll be tomorrow.
That'll be tomorrow. Yeah. By the way, he never did it again because I told him, don't do this.
Yeah.
Don't do that to me again. I don't want a computer sheet with 100 pages, minute by minute, of what I did wrong. If you don't, you said you like what I do. If you don't like what I do, let me go. I said that the first day.
Mm-hmm.
And he left me alone then.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there for about 2 years, I think.
Or did he fire you and you just didn't go away like George Costanza? He just kept showing up. You know, nobody likes having to go through that of being called on, you know, at home especially. Seriously, I know. But it does happen. And you know, the question is all right, where do you draw that line? You can draw that line, and sometimes the employer draws the line.
I slipped them a Mickey. Because remember, that's how that show ended.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
He is Eric Carley. I'm Gary McNamara. We go to Rick in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Rick, hi. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Yeah. Hey, Eric and Greg. I've been looking at this omnibus spending bill hard and looked at all the pros and cons. And, it's a unanimous that people are very upset that he went ahead and signed it. And some of the pros, you know, some people are saying that he's, you know, not playing chess, he's playing 3D chess. And one guy tonight I heard him say, oh, he's playing 4D chess, no, not 3D chess, you know. And so some of the positive things that they've got that they're spending it is that they said, Obama, well, for a start, we haven't passed a budget since 1996. And so it's been a long time. They've been doing these spending bills for a long time. And the reason being is that they are budget is controlled entirely by Congress. And I heard you mention that they would be sued, or Trump would be sued if he strayed away and started spending money on other things. But apparently, I've heard from several people is that they're saying that Obama and Bush, they were spending, and even Clinton, they were spending money with these spending bills how they see fit and not applying it to whatever they were supposedly told to spend on in the spending bill.
Well, I would need to know the specifics on that. Thanks.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. I just went to the, by the way, in the news today, Eric, I just went to the Drudge Report, and there it is again. Congressman, rumor, Paul Ryan ready to resign next 30 to 60 days.
Uh-huh.
He's been up there for a while, and Paul Ryan's office said last night he is not planning on resigning. So.
Yeah, this has happened a couple of times before.
Now, it has, yes.
Why is that?
Hope.
Is it? It must be, right?
Hope.
It must be.
Desperation. Please.
Well, you know, for Boehner, it was not hope, but the Pope. Remember the Pope coming to the U.S. and the visit?
Yep.
And
mm-hmm.
Boehner didn't stop crying, because Boehner really hasn't ever stopped crying. But it was... It wasn't long after that where he announced he was going to step down and do something more, I guess, biblical in nature, which is to go sit on the board of a tobacco company. You know, we all have our callings. I'm not sure if he's still crying or not, but you know... You realize sometimes life isn't about the money or the fame or the power. It's about doing something for the greater good. So you go off and work for a tobacco company.
It's funny because I was just reading the article on Fox and Fox News during the top of the hour.
Yeah.
And I just said, I looked at you and I said, what's this article about? Alice Cooper talking about the fact that, you know, that spirituality helped save him from alcoholism.
Right,
I'm like,
right.
Well, this story is 30 years old, isn't
right.
it? And it's because he is in that, he's in the Jesus Christ Superstar.
Right. Yeah.
With John Legend special, yeah. which is coming up. And so they interviewed him on it. And he said, that he's a Christian. And it's funny because... That's why I laughed at your John Boehner one about the tobacco company, because he said he's asked all the time about being Alice Cooper and mm-hmm. being a Christian.
Right.
He goes, you can be a Christian and be a rock star.
Right. Yeah. His dad was a pastor. And
right. He goes, it's a role that,
a lot of people don't know that a lot of the guys in heavy metal. Now, he did have a long running bout years ago with alcohol. Alice Cooper did, but a lot of the heavy rockers actually are born again Christians. That's actually something that's not talked about. There's a whole list of them. Dave Mustaine from Megadeth and others mm-hmm. have talked about that. With Alice Cooper, I think it's been fairly known with people who follow him, I guess. I'm not the biggest Alice Cooper fan necessarily, but I think he seems to be a very likable person. I get what he does. You know, the whole Alice Cooper show, personality that he created and
for character. For me, Alice Cooper is my senior year of high school.
Yeah.
And it's simply Schools Out was my senior year of high school.
Mm-hmm.
No More is Mr. Nice Guy.
Right.
My senior year of high school.
Yeah.
So you you remember that. Paul Simon, mm-hmm. when I think back on all the crap I learned in high school, right. My senior year in high school.
Right.
So
different stage show than Alice Cooper.
No, but those but you know, you understand. I'm trying to think. I think I probably have a couple of Alice Cooper tunes somewhere, and maybe the greatest hits CD somewhere in my thousands of CDs.
That 70s stuff I liked, and you heard it back then. You heard it quite a bit. You know, I wouldn't call myself like a super fan, but I think he's a good guy.
And I think and a pretty good golfer, too.
That's what I understand.
Yeah. And I've never seen him live. I've been much interested in seeing him live in the stage. Doesn't do anything for me. But those songs, those pop songs, are part of my, part of your life. As soon as you hear those tunes, you know what I found out as I get older? There's a music that I like because technically I like it. Mm. You could throw a lot of prog rock in there.
Right.
And I like it because it really, to me, is great, great, great music. But as I get older, and this bothers me a little bit, there's
the getting older or
getting older and the things that come with it, that there are now a ton of soft songs from my youth that I hear now
that feel different.
That bring back such sweet memories,
yes.
Sort of nostalgic. And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm old. Nostalgia thing, no.
Yeah. Yeah.
For example, I can hear a Bread tune and go, David Gates, Bread.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Oh, shh.
Yeah.
Now, I will admit, I always liked the Carpenters. Even way back when, I just think she had one of the most incredible voices ever. And, you know, what he did early on, Richard with the overdubbing and everything else was pretty genius at the time, what he did. I was never a Beach Boy fan at all when I was young.
Mm-hmm.
I can appreciate them a lot more now, what they did. I have Pet Sounds, for example. I don't really have anything else, but I have Pet Sounds. I love that album, Pet Sounds.
Right, right.
So I think it's sort of focused on that to begin with. But I can go back and listen to a lot of difference, in the last really year. And it was, had a golf outing with Independent Bob. Mm. And he was telling me how, guess who. And I started playing some old Guess Who again. Stuff that they did.
Yeah.
Burton Cummings and Randy Bachman, the stuff that they did together was fantastic. And it was incredibly produced for that time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I actually have a bunch of Guess Who that I hadn't listened to in 30 years.
Right. Yeah. I did that recently with Badfinger.
Oh, yes.
And it was one of those, at the time, underappreciated things.
Hold it. Let me just jot down.
I know, right? Exactly. The thing is because of it used to be, back in our day, you had to go out and you had to purchase the actual tangible piece of music. But now, if you think of something, whether it's on, Pandora, your playlist, your MP3s that you might own, or Amazon Music or whatever, you can just pull it up on demand. I mean, YouTube even. You just pull it up on demand.
You just hit me, Badfinger, because now I want to download Day After Day, no matter what, and Baby Blue. And there's probably a few others, too, in there.
Right. The closing scene on the finale of Breaking Bad is, my Baby Blue. Because the drug that he made in the methamphetamine was blue, and that was like the closing of the, and that's kind of what it was on the other day. It was on like a month or two ago, whenever it was, and I watched it and I was like, I'm not listening to enough Badfinger. When you set your quota. You know what I don't hear enough of? That's when you're getting old. I don't hear enough of Badfinger. I'm gonna go download some Badfinger. It was one of those moments where you're just listening out. Yes. Man, I haven't heard any Badfinger in a long time. You know, and so you kind of
now,
go back to
I
that.
I want to make this clear. Mm. I haven't downloaded any Carpenters. It's if I still hear it once
yeah.
in a while. But I've never owned or downloaded a Carpenters, but I've always appreciated, you know, what, you know, heard the voice that she had, which
yeah.
was just unbelievable. When you think
yeah.
of it, unbelievable.
Right.
I hear her voice enough Christmas time with the Christmas stations.
There's a new movie out, about to be out. The remake of A Star Is Born.
Really?
Bradley Cooper.
No.
Yes, with long hair and a beard. With long hair and a beard. And Lady Gaga. You know, of course, in the movie,
yeah,
she'd be playing kind of the plain Jane, you know, kind of thing. Someone being discovered, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I've seen a couple of clips, and I'm thinking, I wasn't the biggest fan of the first one. I mean, I saw it. I mean, it was all right. It was okay.
I saw parts of it about 3 weeks ago. It was on, and I watched, it was just Christopherson when he jumped in the vehicle, and had the bottle with him and was drinking, and I just went, okay, I've had enough.
Yeah. And then I don't know what Bradley Cooper's talent is for music. You know, I guess we'll have to wait and see. I mean, with Kris Kristofferson, it was a given. And Barbara Streisand. But now you have, but Lady Gaga will be a given. So, I don't know. Could be good. They say they expect it to be a really big movie. So, but I kind of go back, unlike you, sometimes you'll revisit those songs, you'll hear those songs, and you'll say, oh, didn't buy the song then. But, man, that takes me back to this time, and it's like, oh, man. Steely Dan recently started, for whatever reason, it started, like, hitting all over again. Kansas and some of those other bands that, you know, had kind of faded away. The thing with our industry is that when you work in music radio, you're exposed to a lot of it. And when you're overexposed to it, well, when my wife and I met, she was in television and I was in radio. She didn't watch television, and I didn't listen to the radio. You know, I didn't listen to much music, actually, because I was in music radio. You're kind of overexposed to it. Then, you know, as you get older, you know, and then now everything's just kind of broken up, and you know, you can get music from a million different places. But you still don't listen to it like you used to, and then you go, oh, wait. And then all of a sudden, boom, you can call it up in a heartbeat.
You know, the funny thing is... That happened to me with Led Zeppelin.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't listen to Led Zeppelin for like 35 years.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden I heard, was it Rock and Roll or something about 3 months ago? And I went, wow, this is really good.
Yeah.
If it came on a classic rock station over the last 35 years, like, turn it off. I've had too much of it.
Well,
and all of a sudden it brings back that memory. Now songs are starting to hit times of my life. I'm like, oh, God.
Robert Plant, I saw a clip of him at a live show doing Babe, I'm Gonna Leave You, and that was the one. And I've got the box set. My oldest brother, biggest Zeppelin fan on the planet, and he can prove it. and he sent me the box set, you know, on CD. But still, it was one of those that was like, you know, when that song hit, when you heard it, for whatever reason, it's like totally out of context. You didn't seek it out. It just kind of falls in front of you and then has that connection. You know, that's the thing that's music.
So far, I haven't had the itch to hear Rock and Roll Hoochie Coo yet, so I'm doing okay.
I don't know. I like Rick Derringer.
He's still doing good. You see him once in a while on...
Yeah, right.
His wife's on Twitter or something. Mm-hmm. Is she a conservative, I think, maybe?
I
thought somebody's a conservative. Somebody was...
Yeah.
I remember they were on the last. There was something about Rick Derringer and his wife, or that they were on social media. There was something going on,
right?
About 6 months ago, but that's why it popped into my mind. All right, coming up, other things in the news. The Dow posts its biggest point gain since
669 points
2008. Why? What happened? And a little bit on some of these trade deals. We had examined it earlier, the South Korea trade deal, just so people know what's going on. And a lot of it is window dressing.
Yeah.
A lot of it really isn't the substance of, okay, we're winning big here or we're winning big there. There are small victories, modest victories, but a lot of it, for example, on the cars and stuff like that, is really window dressing.
Well, it's kind of, you know, it makes you wonder why it's in there, you know, and right. Who is it? Who are they dressing that window for?
Yeah. All right. And what else do we have? The possible problem with Stormy Daniels, which has nothing to do with the possibility of the affair or whatever, right. but the actual legal implications there that people are going, will Robert Mueller go there? All coming up. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Earlier this year, a White House interagency task force led by Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue released its report on how to improve rural prosperity in our nation, including agriculture. A report with over 100 recommendations addressing areas such as e-connectivity, quality of life, and economic development. Implementation is underway on some of those recommendations, and as the White House Special Assistant for Agriculture told an audience at a recent AgriPulse event,
that work continues.
As Ray Starling elaborates,
we at the White House are going to continue to be involved in coordinating and monitoring the work that's coming out of some of the cross-agency initiatives that were identified there.
And in terms of the report itself, Starling equates it as a map towards rural prosperity.
So it presents a multiple number of ways to get to the destination. Our job is to continue to use that as a touchstone and continue to come and refer back to that as it drives our agenda.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The USDA report is a service of Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. So just sitting here and reading Tom Arnold's review of the first Roseanne show.
Wow. Okay.
So he basically says, if you expect it to be your point of view, if you're a loyal Fox or MSNBCer, and you expect it to hit
lean
your...
one way or the other, yeah.
It doesn't. It's about, both are included, but it's about the jokes, which is fine with me.
Mm-hmm.
You and I just had this discussion here off the
air. Yeah, I mean, I want it to be funny. I want the writing to be good. You know, and he was a writer, of course, Tom was, for that show.
Right, and he was an ex-husband and very prejudiced, not a fan of Roseanne. And he makes that clear going in. When the Hollywood Reporter asked him to do it, he goes, I may not be the person. He said, bottom line, because we have talked about the show before and how she's going to be a Trump supporter.
Right. Her character will in the show will be a Trump supporter.
Yes.
Lori Metcalf is not, and so
no, and they right here that their first confrontation. Jackie walks in with a nasty woman shirt and a vagina hat in hand.
Mm-hmm.
What's up, deplorable? She greets her sister.
Mm-hmm.
If you just read the words of the scene that play out, you'd shut off the TV whether you were a Fox News or MSNBC fan. The back and forth covers a lot of ground: healthcare, snowflakes, flags, and guns. But the jokes work.
Right. It has to be on a realistic level. First of all, true to the characters that, if you knew the show before, what those characters were, it's going to have to be true, years later. I mean, that's going to have to be true to those characters and feel very natural for those characters. You know, you were saying that during the break. It's got to feel realistic, right? But ultimately, it's got to be funny. It's got to be entertaining. That's the point.
Then he writes, if you want to watch a show because it's a voice of your political point of view, right or left, do not watch Roseanne Reboot. You'll be disappointed. But if you're a fan of the original Roseanne, especially the glory years, the Tom Arnold years, this is as good as it's going to get.
Seriously, what happened to Tom Arnold? What's he doing these days?
I think, doesn't he do some Hallmark movies once in a while?
Does he?
I think, yeah. And I remember he had a short-lived show of his own.
Yeah.
I actually liked it.
I think he can be funny. I mean, he's
actually
he can be very entertaining.
Yeah.
But that's pretty interesting that he wrote that. But yeah, I don't expect it to do my activism work for me. Just produce some laughs, right?
Yeah. Here's your forecast.
As we wrap up the first day of the work week, we are beginning the second day with some copious amounts of rain in the forecast. A slow-moving storm system will bring a threat for severe thunderstorms, heavy rainfall, and flooding to portions of the plains and lower Mississippi Valley. Expect heavy rain today around Little Rock, Fort Smith, Memphis, Jackson, Texarkana. Out ahead of the front, thunderstorms fire up today near Austin along I-30 and I-40 into Nashville. You may see thunderstorms today on I-65 from Chicago into Indianapolis down through Louisville and along I-55, Chicago to St. Louis. Out ahead of this system, we can expect, at least in the overnight hours, the possibility for some icing from Erie, Pennsylvania, down through West Virginia. Now, that'll affect portions of the PA Turnpike, but that would be east of Pittsburgh. In the west, with the exception of western Washington, it will be dry. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Public opinion every night, Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90 Red Eye. So the stock market skyrocketed, best day point wise since 2008, almost up 700 points.
Yeah,
and a great day. One of the reasons is because probably of the South Korea deal, which shows the free trade deal. The managed trade deal,
yes,
that both sides agreed to, and both sides seem to be extremely happy with. The South Koreans saying this is just fantastic, and one of the things that they thought was going to happen with the free trade agreement is that the United States was going to come in and play hardball with the tariffs that they have on American rice and fish going into South Korea, and the United States didn't play hardball with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so you will hear things about the South Korean deal where we can sell now twice the number of American trucks, is it?
American vehicles. Yeah.
American vehicles.
Right.
We can up it to 50,000 from 25,000.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not even selling 10,000.
Right.
So that's nothing. You're extending something that we're not even reaching the capacity of what we can do right now. And the 25% tariff on the South Korean trucks.
Mm-hmm. Pickup trucks. Right.
Pickup trucks, mm-hmm, stays at 25% until 2040. And you're saying, well, that's an incredibly high tariff. They don't sell them anyway.
Right.
They had no plan on selling them in the United States anyway.
Mm-hmm.
They sell what Hyundai focuses on, and who's the other one? Hyundai and
Kia.
And Kia. They focus on sedans, mm-hmm, and they have no interest in coming into the market. So, in essence, you're not. It seems like, okay, you know, we're and I talked about the negotiation one time when I was in a broadcasting union, and the union bragged that we have increased the base rate for talk show hosts in this local market that I worked in. 36%. Incredible. We've done our job as union, you know, as your union. Well, you found out the average salary was twice as high for the average talk show host.
Mm-hmm.
So the union was bargaining nothing.
Right.
Well, we're bargaining a ceiling that's half of what you guys actually, the average person actually makes, or I think might have been the lowest person full-time in that market.
Hmm.
So the industry itself was paying way over what the union was, but they were trying to make themselves be relevant. But what were they negotiating? Nothing.
Nothing. They
Nothing.
Didn't accomplish
right.
anything.
Right. So in this case, you weren't now on steel.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that they made the compromise on steel is they believe that, you know, look, it's still 70% of the average of the last 3 years.
Right.
Which is still going to be great for us importing or exporting steel to the to the United States, and their belief is the United States will still increase it because they're going to need it, and because it is going to rise slightly, because if you're going to limit demand, if you're going to limit imports, that means what? The price still will go up a little bit. You're going to change supply chains. And so, yeah, it will go up. And they believe that the United States overall will reduce it. But they did that because they won, because they were able to keep their tariffs on rice and fish.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the bad part about it is that the mentality that the South Koreans have, that some have here in the United States, that somehow the protectionist policy of charging the consumer more is a win for you.
Right.
But as we have said, all these free trade agreements are basically, we basically believe that they will be modest. The United States will claim victory. Trump will claim victory. What the victories are, we're not sure. We can't even be sure what the victories are in this. But they make an agreement where nobody tariffs anything too high. And if they tariff something, it's something you're not buying anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And if they put import restrictions or on you, it's something you're not importing to begin with. And so everybody walks away saying, politically, we've got the win, and morally, we've got the win.
Mm-hmm.
Yet not much really happens that was different
there's
than
no, there's
last
no
year
great
or
effect.
Before. Right.
Right.
And that's
you'll see the South Korean steel prices will go up. It won't be as much as a tariff. The quota, though, to lower it to 70% of what they were doing over the last 3 years will have an effect because the supply, but it's not going to be the effect of a tariff.
Right, but on their domestic market, it will lower it a little bit because their supply will be greater at home.
They'll have a glut at home.
Which means what? They'll be selling it to other places around the world cheaper,
right.
Which then those places, whatever they manufacture, can manufacture cheaper than the United States can, even if they're importing South Korean steel.
Right.
So, that's what we have said. We don't have free trade. We still have managed trade that we call free trade.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But what you hope to do is you hope to get these little political wins by claiming you're doing something when you're really not, and putting a little bit of tariffs on it, claiming that those little bit of tariffs somehow help you when all they do is raise the cost of doing business, but you attempt to keep it to a minimum so you don't raise the cost of doing business too much, just a little bit, because that gives you the political and somehow the moral high ground win. Still can't figure out how, but
right.
That's
the interesting thing to watch will be China, and then essentially the renegotiation of NAFTA continued. I mean, if you look at the exemptions given to Mexico and Canada, those are still temporary exemptions, although temporary can be permanent in the political realm. That's the thing. We can say temporary. Well, it's still temporary. It doesn't mean it's forever, but what is forever? That's the question. I think I just wrote a new Bread song.
It all goes back to David Gates.
What is forever? But this was the first what they call permanent exemption. Nothing is permanent. When it comes to trade, nothing is permanent. It's the ever changing political football that everyone carries. Every party carries it. Every candidate, every president carries it, and will likely carry it. And what they want you to believe is that they can manipulate the economy into something better through this. The best thing they can do to improve the economy is get the hell out of the way.
It will be interesting still to see how much of an impact Larry Kudlow, because I don't believe he's fully on board yet, is he?
I don't know how active he is. I don't think he was very active in the South Korean thing.
No, because it's been going on for a while. People think that it was this whole thing came down. The negotiations started a week ago and ended today.
I think probably the president wanted him in place for the whole China thing. Because I think it's such a huge deal with intellectual properties and Kudlow, even though he's not a pro-tariff guy, did talk, last week on CNBC as he was leaving, about getting tough on China. He didn't mention the word tariff, but, getting tough on especially intellectual property. So I'm certain he's, going to be that key guy for the president And we'll see. The story also coming out over the weekend about the administrative changes, the so-called insider that is telling the Washington Examiner and others that there will be some more changes in the administration coming very soon. So we know about Bolton coming in as national security advisor.
Who's left to go?
Here's my question.
Trump has replaced himself.
Yeah. There have been there's a number of vacancies still there, but I think when you look at like Bolton, that's likely a move to kind of lead the way or at least be there for the president on the North Korean thing, if there is to be a summit, and I think with Larry Kudlow, China, and so mm-hmm. and those two are kind of related because you need to have China wants diplomacy with North Korea. They don't want the refugees of North Korea pouring into China. They don't want that. I think they've been clear about that. So that's something that they fear. They don't want really the fall of Kim Jong-un. Even they want everything to just calm down and hope it will go away, and then everyone turns a blind eye to him starving his people and killing his own family members again as it was before. But this is all tied together because you're going to have to sit down and you're going to have to get that blessing even for that summit to a certain degree. You're going to have the blessing of all those in the region. South Korea clearly is on board. I think China clearly is on board. But that the logistics of it all will be done through those conversations with those nations. And it remains to be seen how that will happen.
And on the Stormy Daniels scene, the problem is not the affair. The problem is, will Robert Mueller go down the path? Because Stormy Daniels' attorneys have already brought it up about, was the $130,000 an illegal campaign contribution that
right.
basically done, not through official
campaign
money
sources.
It's a gift in kind because it benefited your campaign.
Right.
And it's sort of the same thing that they tried to go after John Edwards for. They weren't successful in court of doing it. He was found not guilty.
Right.
But it was based on the same concept with he and his mistress and trying to keep it quiet. And so that's the whole point of will this be the road that Mueller goes down in order to get Cohen, Trump's attorney, to turn on him because he mm-hmm. said, no, I never had any conversation with Trump. Nothing ever happened. But is that the road he will go down?
Well, and there's some emails that are now surfaced. Stormy Daniels' lawyers filed an amended lawsuit yesterday to this effect. This was one of the points made in that lawsuit, that this $130,000 really acts in effect as a gift in kind because it benefited the campaign directly. That violates the law. So one of the points they made now legally that they're making this point. And then from that is Mueller and based on his history, how could he not go there and bring in Cohen to, question him about, whether then candidate Trump knew of all this going on. And
right.
then does he try and make that case that this would be, again, effectively a gift in kind to the campaign, which it exceeds the limit, the contribution limit, greatly. And don't know if he would try and do that you would have to get the president's lawyers and everybody else involved, because eventually you got to bring the president around or somebody and get a statement from him.
Just like the John Edwards situation where he was found not guilty,
mm-hmm.
I don't know the similarities of what Mueller would be looking at where he would either ignore it or decide to go down this path.
Right.
Whether he would look at the president, John Edwards, and say, no, there's nothing here, or whether he'd say, well, let's just go down this road to see what we can find
right.
and put people under oath.
Which has kind of been his MO up to this point. The president didn't sign the confidentiality agreement. Donald Trump then at that point didn't sign that confidentiality agreement. But are there emails that show that he was aware of it?
Right.
That this was going to be, that Cohen was going to do this and offer and ultimately give that $130,000. That's where it becomes a legal mess not necessarily the affair itself.
866-90-RED-EYE.
The Detroit powertrain offers efficiency through innovation. Detroit's Brad Williamson has all the details.
A lot of the people in the industry have been doing downspeeding for a while. This is really our first entry into that arena, if you will. So we've combined a DD15 mm-hmm. with a DT12 automated transmission and a 6x2 axle. And you can also get a 6x4, but really it's a complete powertrain. All three pieces, including a front axle, obviously, all four pieces are from Detroit. And it also has something in the transmission called intelligent powertrain management. It's a better step towards predictive technology. So it looks a mile in front of you when you're driving. It knows the territory and the terrain you're going to come up on, and it manages the engine and the transmission the most optimally as that it can when you're in cruise control.
For more on the Detroit powertrain, log on to demanddetroit.com. For Shell Rotella, that's the engine report.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. You ready for this one?
All right.
All right. Malaysia proposes jail for up to 10 years for...
What?
Fake news. The Malaysia Prime Minister's government tabled a bill in Parliament Monday outlawing fake news.
Now, that would literally mean The Onion would be outlawed in Malaysia.
It might be. With hefty fines and up to 10 years in jail, raising more concern about media freedom in the wake of a multi-billion dollar graft scandal. The bill was tabled ahead of a general election that's expected to be called within weeks, as the prime minister faces widespread criticism over a huge graft scandal. Under the anti-fake news bill, anyone who publishes so-called fake news could face fines up to $128,000 and 10 years in jail or both.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.